BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening. Welcome everybody to another BDNG Meets podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I'm the Education and Development Lead for the BDNG. And today I have great pleasure in introducing Leslie Crichton, who's a member of the Ichthyosis Group. So welcome today, Leslie. Really good to have you on board on this podcast. And could you just sort of introduce yourself and your sort of journey into becoming a member of the Ichthyosis Group, just a bit of background?
Yeah, hi Tina. Thank you very much for having me on today.
Pleasure.
So I'm Leslie. I'm 47 and I live in Scotland, in Perthshire. And I've really only come into the Ichthyosis Support Group recently. So I've got what we thought to be Ichthyosis vulgaris, which I've had since birth, and it's inherited in a sort of 50-50 autosomal dominant way. So it runs in my family. So my dad's got ichthyosis, my grandmother, brothers, cousins. It's a condition that we are really used to in the family and that we don't really particularly medicalise. It's just a thing that we have and mm-hmm. don't really see doctors about it or anything like that. But the reason that I have got involved with the group is that I've got a 14-year-old daughter who also has the condition. And somehow the rest of my family have managed to completely breed it out of their kids. So actually she's the only one in her generation now that has it. So I'm really kind of conscious that I want her to have a support network that isn't in the family, because eventually there won't be any of us around for her to see and talk to about it. So I think I've got involved with the support group because of her. But actually it's been way more useful than I actually thought it was going to be. And so it's been, a really lovely thing to be involved with for lots of reasons.
That's fantastic. And thank you for being so open about the condition as well. So you mentioned there that you've had ichthyosis vulgaris for a while. And do you feel that it's something that is discussed sort of openly about? Was there any other support out there before you joined the Ichthyosis Group? Did you find that, you know, you got the correct support at the time?
It's an interesting one because I'm not sure we ever really looked for it particularly. I think it's, like I say, because we don't, it's just something that we're so used to that we don't really medicalise it. I think whenever I have gone to see somebody medical about it, which we've maybe done every 10 years or something, mm-hmm. just out of interest, it's not massively well recognised. I don't think, I feel like some people particularly knew that much about. But having said that, I feel like our skin condition is quite mild, so I don't really feel like necessarily needed much in the way of support. I was aware of there being an ichthyosis support group when I was a child that I think my parents got involved with at least briefly, but it was really different then because you had to travel to London. It was always going to London. And when you're in Scotland, that's quite a big expense and a big journey. Whereas now, because everything's so available online, it's so much easier to engage. So now I think there's loads of support. I'm not sure if there was 20 years ago.
Yeah, I think things have really progressed that way. And like you say, sometimes, you know, having the power of even, you know, now our mobile devices and social media and getting access to support groups is so much easier than it was years ago, definitely. And yes, I understand. I mean, you live in a lovely part of Scotland, but it is very far from coming down.
Yeah, so. It's a long way.
A very long way. I know your pain with that one, definitely. So your family were well aware of the diagnosis, and your daughter, did she have it from an early age as well? Was she, you know, were you aware of it from the beginning?
Yeah, so she literally came out and we were like, oh, she's got ichthyosis, and then where's the bottle of glycerine, you know, cream straight on. So it wasn't it wasn't a surprise. And I've got three kids, and she's been the only one that has it. So it was, we were expecting at least one of them to have ichthyosis. Yeah, so it was, yeah, right from the start, we knew what was going on.
And coming from an adolescent's point of view, because I mean, it's tricky times being an adolescent, whatever, isn't it? I mean, it's such a bit of a roller coaster ride. And, you know, pressures of school, pressures again of social media, pressures of exams, you know, life decisions, all these things come at such an early age now. So how does she cope? How does she feel about everything?
I think she has moments where she certainly told me that she wishes that she hadn't been born a couple of times because of it, on particularly low moments. But I think generally she's coped with it quite well. I mean, it's obviously a total nightmare being a teenage girl anyway.
Yeah.
And other kids can be mean. So I certainly remember in primary school, so when she would have been maybe 6 or 7, there was a lot of unkindness, and they would, her name's Laura, they would talk about the Laura touch and say, don't touch Laura, you'll get her skin, which was horrible. And I, as a sort of teenager, I think she's conscious of it. I think the thing that she finds the hardest is overheating. So because we don't sweat particularly well in the summer, you just get hotter and hotter and redder and redder. And I think taking part in PE, I think it's quite difficult to get PE teachers to understand what that's like, and to give her time to cool down and whatever. But what I really hope, and why I think we're lucky, is that because it runs in the family, she's got other family members that she can see. And I hope that what she sees is people just living a normal life and getting on with it regardless. And I hope that that's a really positive thing for her, that she sees that people can have a normal life with a condition like hers.
Yeah, that is positive message, isn't it? And to have that family support as well is so important. And obviously you mentioned there about, you know, schools and, you know, PE teachers, you know, not really understanding, which is understandable. Not, you know, even medical professions don't, you know, have the whole knowledge of every skin condition. But how did you feel you had to approach the school, or was it implemented through, you know, other teachers, or did you feel you had to put in that extra layer for your daughter as well?
We've definitely had to approach the school, and I think probably if I had my time again, we were probably too hands off with it. I think because I normalise it, because I don't see it as a condition, I probably wasn't proactive enough with the school. And what I probably should have done is treated it more like a condition from the start and made people more aware. So yes, it's almost taken a sort of crisis, and for her to come home upset, for me to then go and say and write the PE teacher a letter, or ask for, the other thing is asking for more time at the end of swimming or whatever to get, you know, to get ready. Yes, so I have underdone that, I think, and I wish I'd been more proactive now.
Yeah, but it's tricky as well. And like you say, you want to normalise it and not make a massive, massive deal, you know, when your family's involved. And as mums, we've always done these things. And in hindsight, it's a lot easier, definitely.
Totally.
Yes, it's definitely, you know, you're not the only one when it comes to these things. And also, what about treatments then? How do you cope and, you know, with all the treatments? And have you sort of had challenges from that? Or has it, again, been very positive, quite straightforward? Is there anything you could share to our listeners today about specific treatments?
So for me, again, because it runs in the family, what the family has always done is use glycerine, which seems to be the thing that works the best for us. Mm-hmm. And we try a few other bits and pieces, but that always seems to be the thing that we come back to. And I think, again, I think we're lucky because you're born with it, so you've never known any difference. So you just put on the glycerine whenever you wash or have a shower, and it's just what you do. I think my daughter has found her own way. She much prefers sort of hand creams and emollients and things rather than glycerine. You find your own ones that suit you, that are the least staining or the least greasy, or you know, the ones that last the longest. But I think that we get lots of suggestions about urea creams or salicylic acid and things like that. But to be honest, I'm not convinced they make a huge amount of difference for us. I think it's just moisturise, moisturise, yeah. Moisturise endlessly is the only thing that really works.
Yeah, and it is. I mean, I always think, you know, it's definitely the expert in front of you, you know, when you're saying about emollients, because whatever works, and I know myself, you know, you put something on and go, oh no, that's not right. Yeah. You're not going to use it. So I think as a healthcare professional, it's very important to consider what actually works for the person in front of you. Definitely, definitely. And do you feel that it's in worse in certain, like, does the weather kind of make it go up and down, or is it, you know, the heating of the heating on that kind of thing, does it make a difference?
Yeah, it definitely goes through cycles anyway, but then it's definitely worse in the winter, whether it's the cold or the lack of vitamin D and sunlight, I don't know. Probably both. Although it's interesting because we lived in Zambia for 2 years when the kids were little. And I kind of thought that our skin would just get better, and it didn't. It still went through sort of cyclical good months and bad months. Although it was never as bad as it gets in the winter, like January. We're at peak month for skin dryness. Sorry, what was the question again?
Yeah, so it was basically, you know, just the fact that does it get worse in the, you know, does the weather affect the...
Yeah.
Definitely. It's definitely, you know, something that we are used to, again, as healthcare professionals. You know, we do know the drying out of the heat and going from cold to hot, hot to cold. It can make a vast difference to people. Yeah. And I think as well, you know, when patients come in, they actually discuss that aspect. All right, yes, Tina, the heating's on at the moment. You know, it's not great at the moment. You know, it'll get better in the summer or I'm going on holidays. So it's definitely something we definitely talk about, the environment. And you talked just a little bit before we came onto this podcast today about some surgery that you had. Was that on your toe that was sort of connected to the condition? Are you happy just to talk a bit about that as well?
Yeah, so that's been a bit of a journey. I have even in my 20s, but most recently, probably for the last 8 or 10 years, my little toes have really bothered me. And I've always had like a little area of like erosion in between my little toe and the next one on both sides, something quite painful, always gets worse with tight shoes. But the one on the left was getting worse and worse and worse until it got to the point a couple of years ago where I would have periods of a few days where it would get so sore that I wouldn't be able to put any weight on it at all. So I can remember crawling to the bathroom one day because I couldn't put any weight on my foot, and it would be waking me up overnight with like electric shock feeling.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I would be looking at it thinking, this toe is like a centimetre cubed. It's the smallest part of my body. How can it be this painful? And I remember it would always get worse if I was working for a weekend, because I would work for quite a few hours at a weekend and I'd be on my feet and it would be warm and sweaty. And I remember limping to my car one day at the end of this weekend and like sitting in my car sobbing because it was so painful. And went to the doctor. They sort of treated me for infection. It got a bit better, but then it happened again a month or so later. And anyway, to cut a very, very long story short, it turned out that it was like a digital tourniquet. So I had basically an elastic band of tight skin around my toe, and it was stopping the venous drainage and it was pressing on the digital nerve, I think. And again, to cut a long story short, it turned out that there's a plastic surgeon in locally that has done a procedure on a couple of other people with similar skin in the past. So he was able to, under local anaesthetic, just sort of cut a big zigzag around it basically and put a skin graft, which has completely fixed it has completely changed my life. And yeah, it's been a very interesting journey because nobody, including the dermatologist that I saw, had any clue what it was for maybe a couple of years before we all worked it out. So yeah, that's something I would like to raise awareness of, I think, to stop anybody else having to go through that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good awareness to have that because, again, it's something that I'd not heard of.
And, no, you know, who knew? Your own toe would try and amputate itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I feel the pain with that one. Definitely it's been very, very painful indeed. But yeah, it's something again that, obviously linked into the condition that, it's probably, I would think it's really, is it quite rare, Leslie, or is it something that you have now heard about from other people since you've experienced this one?
The toe thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is tied in with what's ha another thing that's happened recently, which is that I think we've had our diagnosis wrong. So I think what our family actually has is a palmar plantar
All
keratosis,
right, yeah.
which I think, I mean, I don't, there's loads of different kinds of ichthyosis, I think, but I think it sits under one subgroup of ichthyosis. But if you search for that on Google, then it does talk about particular subtypes of that that have this digital auto amputation thing going on with it. So I think had we worked that out, the diagnosis out earlier, we would have found that issue earlier
Yeah.
because it's not linked to ichthyosis vulgaris itself.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I can understand that. And it, like you say, there's so many different types, and it is, isn't it? It's, yeah. And I know working in the BDNG, we've spoken to quite a few people that have different types. So again, it's not just awareness of, ichthyosis. It's all what goes on around ichthyosis and all the different conditions as well. So thank you for sharing that story. It's really informative. And I'm just going to go back to your daughter again. How has she found the support then with the ichthyosis group? And are the people sort of similar ages to herself in this group?
Yeah, so this again has been a brilliant result of getting involved in the support group, because she's at a tricky age, and the Ichthyosis Support Group has quite a few really nice ways of supporting young people. They have a nice family conference, which we've never made it to, but they have sort of a separate activity for the kids to do. But the one thing that I have managed to get her involved with was they run a camp every year. Just over a weekend, they take them all to a PGL camp,
All right.
and they do outdoor activities with them. And so she's been to that twice, and she hopefully won't kill me for saying this, but the second time she went, which was the summer there just passed, she was really angry with me for making her go. She really didn't want to go to it at all. But I made her, and her little brother, who does not have ichthyosis, but he was allowed to go too. She met a girl there who's her age, who has a different type of ichthyosis, who's from Denmark, and they
Right.
have hit it off brilliantly,
Oh.
and are keeping in touch, and we've just been to visit them, and I think she's going to come over and visit us soon as well. So she's found through that support group a friend that has ichthyosis. So that's, for me, that's been brilliant, because that's exactly what I was looking for her, was support out with the family, and also somebody who wasn't her mother telling her what to do,
Yeah.
which is always a good thing for a teenager.
Yeah, that is very true. Yeah, they usually do the opposite, don't they? Yeah. Oh, that's really good though, that she's found that extra support. And it's like they can talk, can't they? If they're similar ages and things, they can openly talk, and that's a really good connection to have. And great that they do the camps as well. That's something, a different outlet. And you
It's
mentioned there that
amazing.
siblings can go as well if they wished as well. That's
Yeah,
good.
it's
Brilliant.
really, really wonderful.
Yeah, and do they separate, do they have like adolescent groups, or how does it work? Is there special sort of forums for younger people, or is it just part of the whole group?
I don't think they have separate forums as such, but I can see them trying to do work for young people and trying to develop them different material and resources and things like that, which is brilliant. And again, it's easier for the little kids. It's the teenagers that I always think are a bit tricky. Yes, I think that's a work in progress.
Yeah. And I think these things, it's always the same, isn't it? It always develops, throughout the years, and everyone has sort of inspiring ideas sometimes, so it can work that way, definitely. So for our listeners today, we've obviously got quite a lot of healthcare professionals on listening to this podcast today. Do you feel that there's any sort of key aspects that you want to get across to our listeners today, or any further support that we can provide for our patients that we maybe see?
I think it's difficult, isn't it? Because rare, you can't know about every single rare condition all of the time. I think the different diagnosis thing is worth thinking about, because I think everybody's been going down one path with our skin, which is maybe why it took so long to work out what was going on with my toe. So I think keeping an open mind is probably really important. And then I think just, and I'm sure your listeners must all know this because you're all professionals and you deal with this all the time, but just the impact of the really seemingly minor things like the cream and the staining of clothes and the skin flakes on your shoulders, and all, particularly for teenage girls, well, teenagers in general, the sort of seemingly minor things are really impactful in people's lives, I think. So just an awareness of that, even for us, is for what is really quite a mild condition. And sometimes the difference between one cream's effectiveness or another is almost secondary to how greasy it is or how much it stains your clothes or what it smells like. Often those are the things that cause people to decide to choose one rather than the other.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really important, isn't it? And like you say, it can be, people think sometimes it's minor, but it's not when it comes to the psychological impact. And I know we're you're very positive about this, but sometimes the negativity around the quality of life aspect and social as well, social aspect, it can be very, very tricky. And I think to navigate for a 14-year-old as well can be extremely difficult. And also, just another quick question about creams and what we have out there. Is it quite difficult, would you say, for your daughter? Because obviously we know there's so much advertising there, there's so much sort of creams and stores and availability for beauty products, and a huge vast amount that obviously contain various ingredients. And there's a lot of pressure, I think, from that age as well to use certain products. Do you feel that your daughter's kind of gone? Does she feel that she's missing out on certain products, or does that just not faze her at all?
There's definitely pressure. I think she's not too bothered, but I can see that a lot of her peers would be about not being able to wear different things. And I know certainly things like lipstick can be difficult because your lips are always dry. So lipstick just doesn't work. It just always cracks. I think that a lot of what gets marketed at the girls is really low quality stuff often. And I think she can definitely, so she'll get gifted something for Christmas maybe that's got a really nice smell, but it's actually rubbish for your skin. And then she'll be like, oh, do I have to use this really boring, whatever it is, oatmeal based cream from, it's much less exciting a product than what she's maybe getting given from her friends. But no, it's not too bad. But yes, definitely the products that work are often really dull and
Yeah,
not very
I know, that's the
exciting.
thing, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely. And I know myself, we do a lot of skincare now, something probably a couple of years ago I wasn't doing as much of, but even with certain skin conditions, we're giving out little goodie bags, but it is, our products. But they seem quite excited about it, even the boys, they love the little goodie bags. But it's trying to make it, this is good stuff, and some of the stuff that's got all the fancy colours and all the rest of it can, irritate. And just even, even myself, you find the irritants in some of them as well. So we've all been there. But it's pressure, definitely, for them, definitely. Fabulous. Well, I'd like to say a massive thank you to yourself today, Leslie. It's absolutely fascinating to get some insight, and as a family as well, to have that impact on yourself and previous family members and your daughter, and what you've done for your daughter as well is fantastic. A quick question before we leave. Do you feel that it impacts the greater family? Like you mentioned there that you've got three children, and myself having three children, I know things it can be tricky sometimes to navigate. So do you feel that it impacts the bigger family, or is that has no impact at all on the siblings?
I don't think it impacts us particularly. for a lot of the reasons that I've spoken about already, that it's because we're lucky, because it runs in the family and you're born with it. It's just, we've just completely normalised it. So no, I don't, other than she sometimes looks at her brothers and says, why me? Why was it me and not them? And I think, yeah, it's totally unfair. But no, I think we're lucky. And my husband learned very quickly how to deal with it. If not from, you know, living with me, then when Laura was born, he just very quickly got on board with it and has become completely used to it. So no, not particularly. I think it would impact a family if it was something that was to start happening, you know, later on. You know, if it started in teenage years or later and you suddenly had to adapt it, I think it would be really difficult. But because I think it's a blessing to be born with something like this, because you just don't know any different.
Yeah, gosh, that's really strong words, and, you know, something that our listeners, you know, maybe it's very thought provoking what you're saying there as well. So thank you for that. So, yeah, I'd really like to thank you today, Leslie. And also, I know your daughter's not on this call, but to thank her as well from the BDNG members, because you've given a lot of good tips and also some really useful information also for our listeners. And I would advise anyone listening to this podcast today to, you know, have a look on the ichthyosis support group as well, because there's lots of valuable information. And obviously the group as well is very active and, you know, spends a lot of time with the BDNG as well. And if you're going to any face-to-face conferences as well, the ichthyosis group is always there and always willing to have a chat. And it's definitely worth reaching out and getting that support. So thank you, Leslie. Thanks for coming on. Lovely to hear that lovely Scottish accent as well. Really appreciate it. And is there anything, any key aspects you'd like to say before we part on this call today?
No, just to say thank you very much. It's been lovely talking to you. And also just a massive shout out to the Ichthyosis Support Group and to Mandy, who are all wonderful and do a huge, huge amount to support their members above and beyond, I think, the call of duty. So yes, do go and visit if you see them, their stall at any conferences or things, exhibitions.
Absolutely, yeah, a massive shout out. Thank you. And thanks again. Thank you so much, Leslie. And also for Mandy as well, for putting us in touch today. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website bdng.org.uk and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.